order. Board's mission is to protect the health and welfare and safety of the public who seek to use the services of the nursing care institution administrators and assisted living facility managers. Today is January the 11th, 2021. Time is 9:01 a.m. Pursuant to the ARS 38431.02, notice is hereby given to the members of the State of Arizona, Board of Examiners, Nursing Care Institution Administrators, and Assisted Living Facility Managers, otherwise known as the Board, and to the general public that the Board will hold a regular monthly board meeting, which is open to the public, January the 11th, 2021. Regular board meeting will be held at 1740 West Adams Street, Board Meeting Room C, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007, and the time again is 9:02 a.m. Persons with disability may request a reasonable accommodation such as sign language interpreter by contacting Alan Emick at 602-364-2273 or through the Arizona Relay Service at 791. Please make your request as early as possible to allow for time to arrange the accommodation. Board's president reserves the right to change the order of the items listed on the agenda except for matters scheduled at a specific time. The agenda is subject to change up to 24 hours prior to the meeting. Board members may be present by telephone. During the course of the meeting, the board, upon a majority vote of quorum of members, may hold an executive session for the purposes of obtaining legal advice from the board's attorney or on any matter listed on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.0383 and for the purpose of discussion or consideration of confidential material pursuant to ARS 38431.0382. The executive session will be held immediately after the vote and will not be open to the public. As a reminder, the resident's name is confidential. You are to refer to the resident by their initials or the word resident. Items that are referenced as a consent agenda may be considered as a single action unless a board member removes a specific item for review, discussion, and action separate from the other consent agenda items. The board will review, discuss, and may take action on the following matters listed on the agenda for January the 11th, 2021. Regular board meeting is as follows. We've already called ourselves to order. Al, if we can do a roll call, please.
Member Villafranca?
Here.
Member Campbell?
Here.
Member Archer?
Here.
Member Kidder?
Here.
Member Lewis? Member Herman? And members Randolph and Siemens are absent.
And Lewis.
Randolph, Siemens, and Lewis. Okay. If everyone on the line will please mute their phones, please take them off of mute when you are called. Until that time, remain on mute. Okay, next up on the agenda is item number 3, calls to the public. Persons who want to address the board do not need to request permission in advance, but they do need to complete a request to speak to the board form so that the board is aware that they're here and that they wish to address the board. Each person who wishes to address the board will be given 5 minutes to do so. However, the board may limit the number of persons speaking on each issue to a reasonable number of persons. Pursuant to ARS 38431.02H, the board can discuss or take action only on matters that are listed on the agenda. Board's action on issues that are not listed on the agenda is limited to directing staff to study the matter or to schedule a matter for future discussion at a future board meeting. At this time, is there anyone who is not listed on the agenda that wishes to address the board? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Next up is the approval of minutes for December 14th, 2020 regular board meeting and the October 19th, 2020 executive session minutes.
I move approval of both.
Second.
Roll
call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Herman?
Okay, motion carried. Next up are complaint cases. Remember that the name of the resident is confidential information in public session. Board members, staff, and the licensee will refer to the resident as resident or use the resident's initials. Is everyone on the phone on mute? Please make sure that you're on mute.
Maybe the mic.
Yeah.
All right, next up is item number A, 5A. It's an agenda to not open investigation on the facility manager that's related to AZDHS enforcement action. Is there any items that a board member saw, item number 3 through, is that 22?
I'd like to pull item 13, please.
Okay.
Item 6,
and I need to recuse myself from 7. Okay. All right, so we have Member Archer looking at number 6. Member Archer is recusing from number 7, and Member Campbell is pulling out item number 13. Any other board member have any issue with any of the ones 3 through 22 that are not present here at the board today, but via telephone? Okay, so I'll make a motion that we will not open a case on item 3 through 5. And 14 through 22 to not open a case.
Second.
Charles and Susan, roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Okay. Next up is to open an investigation on item number 6 and item number 13. I'll make a motion to open.
I second.
Roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Okay, and with Member Archer abstaining from vote, I will make a motion to not open an investigation on item number 7.
Recuse.
Oh, I'm sorry, recuse.
Yeah, so since you recuse, you have to lose a quorum, so we have to put
quorum, so we have to put that on next month's agenda.
Okay,
he's recused. If Nina shows up later, we can come back to it.
Yeah, we can come back. So I'll make a note of that. Okay, now we move forward to item B, complaint cases, start with number 23, complaint number 20-100, involving Administrator Scott McClintock. Bill, before we get started, if all parties here could please introduce themselves for the record.
This is Scott McClintock.
I'm Brian Bailey, attorney for McClintock.
Can you spell your last name for us, please?
B-A-I-L-E-Y.
They're going to need another mic.
Yeah, Zakiya. You get it.
Brian Bailey, attorney for Mr. Woodlock.
Okay, Phil, if you could outline the case for us, please.
It's complaint 20-100. Licensee is Scott McClintock, who's present here with his attorney, Brian Bailey. Between December 9th, 2019, and December 13th, 2019, DHS conducted a nursing care institution recertification survey, a relicensure survey, and 7 nursing care institution complaint investigations at Providence Place at Glencroft, located in Glendale. The recertification survey, relicensure survey, and complaint investigations identified with approximately 27 deficiencies in approximately 60 different areas. Now, it was noted that when staff originally received these documents from BHS, a complaint investigation, complaint number 20-78, was initiated on administrator Ms. Christine Irwin. The board reviewed that case in September of 2020, dismissed the case on Ms. Irwin, and directed staff to open a new complaint, this particular complaint on Mr. McClintock. Mr. McClintock was notice of the complaint. He did retain counsel and did provide a written response. And during the December 14th, 2020 board meeting, as a result of our ongoing technical difficulties, the case was deferred to this month's board meeting, and I'm presenting it to you now. Mr. McClintock did provide his response on approximately May 5th of 2020. DHS took enforcement action and imposed a civil money penalty of $1,000 for a non-substantial violation. And Mr. McClintock and Mr. Bailey here to discuss that.
Thank you. Just one moment. Can we get somebody for audio?
I just emailed the person, so if they're in the building.
I already have it.
Does the feedback interfere with our recording?
No.
Okay.
And can they hear us on the phone? I think they can.
Yeah. Ted and Ken, can you hear us okay on the phones?
Yeah, we can. I can.
I am just like you.
Perfect. Thank you. What did you do different?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. I think the reason I'll open it up. I think the reason that you're here today is ultimately you were in some form of a leadership role and oversaw what was going on in this community at the time that the survey was taking place. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so what was your impact on the administrator or on the operations of the facility at the time of the survey?
Essentially, business management oversight.
And so with business management oversight, does that interfere with or take part in setting standards for how many staff are available on the unit, how many hours staff have on the unit, staffing levels, any of that?
It's certainly an area of concern. We want to be sure the building is staffed adequately.
Are you responsible for that budgetary development portion?
I am.
You are. Because if I recall this case, there were some concerns with regards to that area. Can you explain your involvement? As you indicated, you were the CSO, ultimately, of the facility, the chief strategy officer. But can you tell me the role that you played overseeing the campus and that administrator for this individual survey?
Sure. My management philosophy is one of not interfering with the work of my direct reports. I really try to focus on hiring good people and letting them do what they need to do to manage the building. Beyond that, I don't get involved in operational details of things that are going on in the building.
Okay. Do you inspect kind of what's going on in the building as the CSO?
We do, along with the CEO. We have a daily call, what we refer to as the PPD call, where we look at the staffing levels on a daily basis. And that's part of our oversight of the staffing in the building.
Do you feel that the impact and the roles that the CEO and you play could impact the quality of care being provided to the residents? Because the ultimate issue in this case was quality of care concern. And I'm just curious if you are the one that's setting that budget and you're the one in charge of making sure that you have adequate staff on the floor, what was your role in that for this survey?
The staffing plan was accepted by the building or by management according to what the building laid out as to what they needed. And we staffed according to that as much as we possibly could. We did spend a lot on registry during that year because we had a difficulty of getting staff on the building. But the staff budget was determined by the administration and not challenged by management.
So the administrator record at the time would be the one to determine how many staff would be on the floor, and there would be no involvement from upper management to say it has to change?
No, that's correct. We would not have interfered with, in fact, our great concern was that there was sufficient staff.
And you were the administrator of record for a brief moment in time, correct?
That's correct, from mid-November of 2018 until we hired Ms. Irwin in February of 2019.
And prior to you as the interim administrator, what role did you play with the company before you became the interim administrator?
I was chief marketing officer, and I did not have oversight responsibility for Providence Place.
Okay. When you were the interim administrator, what challenges did you see as the interim administrator while you were there that immediately stood out to you that needed your undivided attention?
I think my greatest concern was with the transition of management, that we had effective staff and leadership roles. There was some concern raised by the assistant director of nursing, Ms. Ryan, as to issues that she thought needed to be improved in the building. And once the prior administrator, Ms. Melissa Watkins, was let go, that's when they asked me to step in. And about 10 days later, the DON also tendered his resignation. And we observed that there were favoritism and some circles of influence that were not really viewed as beneficial in the building. That operationally there were some things that the ADON, Ms. Ryan, identified that needed to change. We ultimately promoted her to DON because we felt like her analysis was valid and that we wanted, she felt that she had a good plan. We agreed that she had a good plan to address the immediate needs in the building. But there was sufficient staff. At that time, in the fall of 2018, we were changing from an 8-hour, 5-day-a-week shift schedule with the different weekend failures and a combination of doubles on weekends. We were changing to a straight 12-hour shift scheme. And a great deal of the turnover in the fall and the early spring was from people who couldn't accommodate that shift. And we had people working weekdays that worked somewhere else on weekends and vice versa, and we went to 12 hours. Weekends went away, and so we had some people leave because of that.
So did that give an area of opportunity that you were probably really low on staff?
I would say yes. I think that was a challenge. That's when we started with registrants, and we perceived that to be a significant threat. And immediately, we had not engaged registry in that building for years up until that point. And right away in the fall, like November, December, we engaged several registries so that we could ensure we had sufficient staff in the building.
And for how long did you have registry in the building?
Almost throughout 2019. And then we finally got rid of the use of registry for the most part in 2020.
And so was registry in your building during the time period that you had this survey?
Yes.
Would you say that some of the findings of the survey directly correlated with the use of registry?
From a correlation in time, absolutely. Yeah. And registry is not our optimal deployment. We just really felt like we had to, had no choice.
So what systems do you know that was put in place to ensure that the highest standard of care would be delivered to the resident? Because that was one of the, I think the only one that really stood out, that the case came before the board, was that a resident was at their highest level of optimal care.
I'm not sure I understand your question. What systems were put in place?
Right. Did you put any systems in place as either the interim administrator or the chief strategy officer because you were only interim for a short period of time, but then you became the chief strategy officer. Did you put any changes in policy? You know, we're going to get the registry on this date. We're working to identify how we're going to bring in more staff. What did you put in place to ensure that this wouldn't happen again?
I think that our key solution was to hire a good administrator, and that's what we believe we have in Ms. Irwin. We still do have great confidence in her ability. She was brought in essentially to solve the problems that we perceived at the time. And essentially, that was it. And I relied on her judgment to change policy as needed. I think that the existing policies in place were adequate. The building has been in operation for a long time, and policies and procedures are well established. So I didn't perceive any necessary changes to fundamental policies and procedures, but the execution thereof was important. So we thought a good administrator would be the answer.
I have no further questions. If any other board member have questions.
I have a question. Who was the administrator then?
So the administrator was one of two different individuals. We had one individual already before us,
yeah,
and quickly identified that it wasn't that individual. Mr. McClintock was the administrator and the chief strategy officer of the organization. And according to testimony from the prior, it was impacting her ability to manage and operate the facility based on upper management decisions that were made outside of her choice, if I recall the case correctly. Ken, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Okay. Member Archer?
No.
Member Campbell?
No.
Ted, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Okay. I think that
Nina's on the line as well.
Nina, did you hear the case?
No, I did not. I cannot vote.
Okay. So I would ask that you abstain since you didn't hear the testimony or the beginning of the case, if you don't mind. But I will say
I'll be fine, I abstain.
Okay, thanks. I think that you know, there was one issue that brought this before the board, you know, after they left, it's going to do it again. And that was what brought me here. That was making sure that the maintenance of the highest practical well-being of the resident was maintained. I apologize for the sound.
Nina? No, as far as are you using the mic's computer or the telephone?
I'm using the computer.
Could you call in to that number and with a PIN number on a landline?
Will do. I need to transition to my phone, but I will do that right now.
Okay. Everyone else is not on a speakerphone, correct? Ted and Ken?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that all being said, I think you understand the challenges of what's going on here. You have a lot of registry staff in. You get some staffing changes. We all understand how that can be. And so I think this just helped bring it to light a little bit more on the investigation. You now have a strong administrator that you have in place that you have confidence in. Organization is doing well. I don't really see anything here, so I will make a motion that the board find insufficient evidence of violation and dismiss complaint number 20-100 against Administrator Scott McClintock.
All second. Red Kidder.
Okay, roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you for being here today. Thank you very much. You know, now that we have, Nina, are you on the line now? Member Lewis, are you on the line? We'll move on to item number 24, case number 20-111, involving Daniel Pereira. Take a step forward, please. And Phil, if you've got one in the case for us.
There is complaint 20-111. The licensee is Daniel Harrow. He's present here today. And on July 24th, 2020, DHS conducted an assisted living facility complaint investigation at the Auberge at Scottsdale, a memory care community in Scottsdale. The complaint investigation identified two deficiencies in two different areas. Mr. Harrow was noticed at the complaint, and he did provide a response. And on approximately October 29, 2020, DHS took enforcement action and imposed a civil money penalty of $1,000 for one substantiated violation. And Mr. Harrow is here today to discuss the complaint investigation.
Thank you so much. This is a frontier community, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just curious. And then, how long have you been there?
7 years.
7 years at the same location?
Yeah.
And how much time do you spend at the community?
At least 50 hours a week. I got Bell's palsy 2 weeks ago, so if I sound funny.
It's okay. It's,
so, yeah, about 50 hours.
About 50 hours. Can you give me the structure of the organization, your management team, what all you have going?
Yeah, so I left in September, but the structure is as an administrator, executive director, and there's a director of health services, and then there's an assistant director. And for us, we don't have med techs, so we have all LPNs, charge nurses, business office manager, marketing director, plan ops director. There's about 10 of us on the leadership team.
Okay.
Plus the structure of it.
So this is a large corporation. Are you able to make policy changes and implement those policies?
No.
I'm sorry?
I'm not. You're not helping the home office.
You have memory care in this facility, correct?
Correct.
And so the issue was is that there was not a specific policy on how frequent staff were to be checking on residents to ensure that there was no one eloped or gone or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, not a specific policy, but there's policy checks throughout the day with eating. You know who's eating breakfast, lunch, dinner. You know who's at activities. You know who's getting their meds throughout the day. So, that way you are tracking residents. In this particular situation, I was off-site helping a different community when, this elopement did happen. I was called at 4 o'clock and...
4 o'clock p.m. or a.m.?
P.m.
P.m.
That a resident had eloped and then a police officer came and told the community that. I spoke to the director of health services, tried to figure out how that could have happened. We've invested a lot of money in technology so that would not happen. So essentially what they said was the alarm door went off. There was a housekeeper outside by the door and the door never was opened. And so during COVID, it's been a challenge because we didn't have a case until July. And this happened July 21. And so because we had a case in a different neighborhood, we did secure our four neighborhoods down, try to prevent a spread. What that did cause was residents to be pushing on the egress doors more. And, me coming back, doing an investigation, they didn't do head count, and they assumed that, because the residents keep hitting the egress door, that, everyone was still in the community. So, I did disappoint the nerves, the charge nurse, because in this situation, they should have done head counts. And this, that's how we, that's how we do our drills. So you do a head count when the alarms go off. I purchased radios for everybody, so the technology goes to everyone's radio anytime you restore an alarm goes off. So it's frustrating because I love our residents, and it's, you know, I don't want something like that to happen. And it's, you know, it just upsets me that it actually happened.
Okay. I have no further
questions. I have a question, Mr. Lippertier. They didn't have a specific policy regarding, you know, searching for elopement, but you referenced doing the headcounts when door alarms went off. Is that correct?
Yeah, when the door alarm goes off, you know, the egress door opens, you're supposed to do a headcount.
Okay, and so somebody that was responsible to do that did not do that, even despite having that policy in place?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And then to follow up on that, you took immediate action afterwards, you said, and you disciplined the...
Yeah, I disciplined the discharge nurse. And you know, the way the layout of the community is, it's kind of frustrating because if someone gets out that egress door, there's two doors. One goes to the center courtyard. There's a one door that goes to the actual outside public area. So that design, you know, this is not the greatest design. So what I did, you know, like the next day, I called our door system company to see the steps to take to get control access on this door, just the four doors that lead to the outside of the community. That is a process that goes through the, you know, Scottsdale Police Department, our department. I accepted a new position, and so that was still in the process. So I do not know, you know, in that time frame if the doors, if the control doors got installed.
Okay.
Are the secure doors, are they controlled with an electric release magnet that will release in 15 seconds, or if once you push, if they are? Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions from any of the board members? All right. It's unfortunate what happened. Fortunately, the resident's okay, and you took immediate action afterwards to ensure that it didn't happen again. The policies, you're not in control of. It's a large corporation. It has to go through all of them before you're able to make policy changes. I don't really see anything here that you could have done differently. So I believe I will make a motion that the board finds insufficient evidence of a violation. Dismiss complaint number 20-111 against manager Daniel Herrera.
Herrera.
Like
the casino.
I second.
Member Campbell.
Member Villafranca.
Aye.
Member Campbell.
Aye.
Member Archer.
Aye.
Member Kidder.
Aye.
Member Ehrman.
Aye.
Member Lewis.
Aye.
Member Lewis.
Thank you so much for being here, sir. Next up, case number 20-112 involving Dan Pimentel. Thank you for being here today, sir.
Thank you.
So if you could help on this, please go to the microphone.
So our complaint 20-112, the licensee is Dan Cornell, who's present here today. And on July 23rd, 2020 and August 20th, 2020, DHS conducted an assisted living facility complaint investigation at Morning Glory Assisted Living located in Peoria. The complaint investigation identified two deficiencies in two different areas. Mrs. Cornell was noticed of the complaint and he did provide a brief response. It was noted that he sold the business on September 15th of 2020 and the facility now has a new manager. And on approximately September 28th, 2020, DHS took enforcement action and imposed a civil money penalty of $500 for one substantiated violation. And Mr. Cornell is here today to discuss the complaint investigation with the board.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
So, Mr. Cornell, I just have a question for you. How big is the facility?
It's a 10-bed facility.
10-bed. How often are you in the community?
When I was still working there, 5-6 days a week, but in and out, not about 40-50 hours a week, but in and out, you have to do a lot of running around to get supplies. At the time this incident happened, we headed up for sale, so it was also involving improving the school interior, not remodeling, but just cleaning and rearranging things to make it better.
Okay, so you were there daily, every day.
Yes.
You were spending about how many hours a day?
I'd say 8 sometimes, 10 sometimes 4.
Okay. And so did you make rounds at the facility all the time?
Yeah.
So how did it come to be that a lock was reversed to lock on the outside so a resident wouldn't be able to unlock a door?
I had a caregiver who had lost her husband, and I don't think she was in the right kind of mind, and she was stressed out. And she asked someone else, another caregiver's husband, to come in and reverse the lock, but he talked before me about it. And at the time of the survey, the room was not occupied, the door was always open. I never had to use the handle, the door lock handle, never even noticed it until DHS came out.
Was there a resident in that room?
No, there wasn't at that time.
Was there a resident in the room ever with that door?
Yes, there was for a very short period of time. She was at the facility for a week, and I don't know exactly on which day, between 1 and 7 of her short stay at the facility, I don't know on which day they reversed the lock.
So, based on
2 or 3 days.
So based on your testimony, 2 or 3 days,
yeah.
With a caregiver who seemed to be frustrated over something going on.
Yes, sure.
It would be safe to assume it dealt with that resident in that room and had someone swap out that lock.
Yeah.
So that resident, it would be easily for me to draw a connection, was locked into a room.
That's my understanding. Yeah, and but she left like 2 days later because she wasn't fitted for a small assisted living facility.
So my question to you, you now know that a resident was secluded into a room. As the manager certified for that business, did you report her to the police for resident abuse and adult protective services so she can go on the list and can't work as a caregiver again?
I fired her. Mm-hmm. She left immediately and I fixed the lock, of course. So I didn't report her to DHS because I just fired her.
Would you consider that resident abuse?
Yes, I would. If I would have known she did that, I would have.
Under our statutes, what does it say about reporting abuse?
Well, I don't know the exact statute, but a nurse reported this once.
I don't understand how someone can come into your facility and change out something so significant and you not know that.
Oh, they didn't tell me.
And if you're there every day.
I have 2 caregivers, and the other caregiver's husband, I was told, came in and did this.
Was he your employee?
Caregiver. Yeah, the husband of another employee, yeah.
But he wasn't your employee?
No.
So you had no control over who was coming in and out of your facility, it sounds like.
Well, he was the husband of the caregiver, so I think it's suspicious that he came by because he did come to visit occasionally. He wasn't a stranger. And neither one of those 2 caregivers worked there anymore, and a month later, we sold the business.
Sure. But for 3 days at least, based on your testimony, a resident could have been secluded and locked in a room because it sounds like a caregiver was frustrated with this resident.
Certainly not during the daytime when I was there.
But we don't know that. Food and water was not withheld from it.
I'm sorry?
Or bathroom?
Yeah.
We don't know.
We don't know what happened to that patient the person who was in your facility. With that door, whether it was locked on the outside, what went on the inside, where she or it was, or the person was.
So
and that's what I have a concern about.
Did you say a nurse was the one who filed the complaint?
Yeah, her husband's nurse filed the complaint.
Wait, what is it again? The resident's husband's?
No. The resident's hospice nurse.
The resident's hospice nurse.
Yeah. But she didn't tell me about it.
So it gets even more involved now that you're talking about a resident who has a hospice nurse, and hospice comes by quite frequently.
Yeah, every two or three days.
Right. So they would have noticed the lock.
Yeah, that's what happened. And she reported to DHS.
And it would have said something.
The nurse didn't tell me anything. The resident left, and then DHS came out 2 weeks, a week later or so, 10 days after that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any other questions from any other board members?
Did the nurse also report to you Adult Protective Services?
No.
Just the DHS?
Just
they didn't call the police?
No.
So basically nothing? Other than DHS got notified.
Right.
DHS got notified.
And then I took corrective action.
What corrective action did you take?
I reversed the lock and I did fire that carrier.
And did you call the police?
No, I didn't call the
Adult Protective Services?
The resident had left.
Ombudsman's office?
No.
Anyone?
The resident had left the facilities.
It doesn't matter. It happened on your watch with a resident in your facility.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to impress upon you, the importance, because you had a resident who was abused by a staff member with her being locked in a room that she cannot get out of, meaning that services are being withheld because she's locked behind the door. And so for those reasons, we're obligated as mandatory reporters to Adult Protective Services, Police Department, Ombudsman's Office, Department of Health Services. And if a nurse knew about it and didn't do anything by notifying the authorities, then you should have reported the nurse. You are the manager of the building. Every piece of that operation falls under your manager certification.
I worked it out with the DHS and I tried to do the efficiency and responded to that by DHS.
Did they write you up for not reporting suspected abuse?
No.
I was trying to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the
I have a question also. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, what I've seen, so they wrote resident not subjected to, should not be subjected to seclusion.
Seclusion.
But they didn't write up, that's what thought, they didn't write up that they. That there's a failure to report suspected abuse. You don't even have to know if it's abuse, it's just suspected abuse.
Yes, she didn't say anything about it.
So DHS didn't do that either. Just okay. Go ahead, Ken.
My question is, you said that the spouse of one of your employees entered the facility. What was your visitation policy back in July due to the coronavirus visitation restrictions?
We have restrictions on only one person one visit per day, one person per visit, and we have a sign-in law, in-and-out law. And they have to wear masks and disinfect their hands, and we took their temperature.
Okay, did this family member of an employee, did they sign in on the log?
Yes, they signed in on the log, but see, since
okay,
I
so
I was going to say I don't work there anymore and I don't have access to papers.
But that's how you were able to authenticate that this other person had come into your home, because they signed the log.
Yeah, they did sign the log, yeah.
Okay. Well, Susan, looking at the page 2 on the statement of deficiencies, with respect to the door lock itself, you're right. It doesn't talk about any abuse or anything. It's just they noted that this lock was reversed,
right?
And that there's rooms 1 and 3 through 7, and all of those were installed correctly. It was just not this one. So it. On July 15th, then, was there a resident in this room?
There was a resident in that room for 7 days total, then she left, and from what I was told, they reversed the lock several days after she had arrived, so I'm estimating it had been reversed for 2, maximum 3 days while that resident was still in the facility.
Okay, was the resident in the facility on July 15th, or had that person already departed?
No, I think she left on the 17th, July 15th, is that
When the survey took place, was that resident in the building?
No, no, she wasn't there. No. Because the surveyor came out about a week after the resident had left. It took them a while to process the complaint.
But I'm guessing that the surveyor knew exactly, a complaint had been filed, so they knew what to look at.
Well, then
they
look
came at in.
Because the door lock should never be reversed, whether there is or isn't a resident.
Oh, we all agree with that. I don't know that my surveyor would ever have paid attention to a door lock.
That's when I found out about it myself.
So, to me, the biggest issue is that I don't believe that you knew. I believe it probably happened in the evening or nighttime at the request of that caregiver who was overly stressed. And I will believe that the person was being fed.
She was.
Et cetera.
They only use that.
The problem is what we're discussing is that you as the manager didn't understand that it was your obligation to we don't know everything at all, every minute of every day, it's impossible.
Right.
But once something is known, it is your job to report. Suspicion of any abuse. Suspicion.
I figured that
somebody who's been locked, who may have been locked in a room, even if nothing not like they were beat or something, just the fact that they were isolated like that is abuse.
Yeah.
If that's what happened, and just you have to report that.
I figured since I fired her and she left the state, there was no point to report her anymore.
And I've had situations where we call the police and there's not anything that they can do.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
But we still did our part to say, well, maybe this person shows up someplace else, and now we can track that a little better. There's not a registry for caregivers. I think we all know that.
I knew that wasn't going to happen. My husband had died in April. I didn't have pictures
that's
on
not,
the phone.
And none so, of that's the point.
Yeah, okay.
None of that's the point. You're a mandatory reporter of any suspicion.
Agreed.
It's not even your job to investigate it per se. You report it and let people come in and investigate. To me, that's the main point. So
right.
I think some education would be
on resident rights.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions from any other board member?
Are you still a manager?
No. I mean, I'm inactive because I live in California now. I sold the business in September, shortly after this incident. And
so you're an inactive manager currently?
Yeah, and my license is due to expire next year in June. I'm really here to try to avoid having it revoked or suspended, but I'm not going to renew it or I'm not using it currently.
You're not using it currently. You plan to let it
expire.
Yeah. But you don't want a revocation.
Right.
So you have other professional capacity that you're working in California?
I have a clothing business now that doesn't require a professional license. I still don't want to blemish
on the record.
Okay. I'm prepared to make a motion. Based upon the information contained in the investigative report, I move the board find sufficient evidence of a violation of ARS 36-446.073, ARS 44610, AACR 433-407A and B1 for unprofessional conduct, and complaint number 20-112 involving manager Dan Cornell, and that the board offer consent agreement to be signed within 10 days of the matter before your formal hearing. Consent agreement shall include the following conditions. Suspension of the certificate to stay the suspension as long as the terms of consent agreement are met. Probation with all terms to be completed within 3 months. Reimbursement of investigative costs in the amount of $425. 3 hours of continuous education with the executive director pre-approval required and documentation completion in each of the following areas. Resident rights.
Quality assurance.
And quality assurance. 3 hours each. Any costs of the probation or those of the license certificate holder. And that's that.
Second.
Charles and Wally. And we'll call
just a second. Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Yeah, aye.
Also, I need to know, someone's on the phone with the 602 number. The last digit is 26. Who is that?
Who's on the telephone line? The last telephone number digits 26.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that everybody who wants to speak has an opportunity to. I mean, it also sounds like someone's breathing into their phone.
Someone just went unmuted. Okay.
Can I just knock more?
Motion carries. So now that we have Member Lewis on the line, let's go back to item number 5A, number 7, because we had Member Archer that had to recuse. And that is to make a motion to not open an investigation on 5A7. So I'll make a motion to not open. Wally seconds. Roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
No. Member Kidder?
I can't hear Al.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries to not open a complaint investigation on item number 5A7. All right, moving right along. Item number 26, case number 20-117, involving...
Can you hold on a minute? Back to the last case.
Yes.
Who made the motion?
I made the motion. It was seconded by Member Campbell.
Okay.
Item number 26, case number 20-117, involving manager Baby Jane Akutin. Did I pronounce the last name right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm usually really bad with names. So I apologize. Okay, Phil, if you could outline the case for us.
Sir, this is complaint 20-117. The licensee is Baby Jane Akutin, who's present here today. And on October 19, 2020, DHS conducted an assisted living facility compliance inspection at Atienzo's Loving Care ALH LLC 2, located in Goodyear. The compliance inspection identified 6 deficiencies in 4 different areas. Ms. Akutin was noticed of a complaint, and she did provide a written response. Akutin stated that in her response, she stated that the deficiencies occurred mostly due to a lack of communication, and that the manager designee was not able to follow designated tasks. On approximately November 18, 2019, DHS took enforcement action, and they imposed a civil money penalty of $500 for one substantiated violation. Should be noted that's November 18th of 2020. And Ms. Akutin is here today to discuss the compliance inspection with you.
Thank you so much, Bill. If everyone on the line would please mute their phone. We're hearing a lot of breathing on the line. Okay, thanks. Let's see. The main one that got you here was residents were left alone. Would you like to explain to the board how residents were left alone in your facility?
It wasn't.
Can you move the mic over so we can hear you, please?
It wasn't that they were left alone. Apparently, the business owner hired a new employee that I didn't know. I was on my way in the facility at the same time, but she left a housekeeper instead of a certified caregiver in the facility because she has her an emergency. Normally, I'm on call, so I didn't know that she has an employee. I didn't know that she was leaving. If I wouldn't know, I would be there and supervising the patients.
Okay. Can you tell me how large of a facility this is?
It's a 5 residents.
If everyone would please mute their phones. Okay, thanks. It's 5 residents?
Yes.
How often are you there?
I go there, I'm on call and once a week.
You're there once a week? Okay. And so, who's in charge of the hiring?
The owner.
The owner. What are your responsibilities as manager?
I go to the process. I would go there and process the paperwork and check and verify that they're certified caregivers. And I would do the rest of the paperwork that we need for the residents.
And you're there one day a week?
I go there, and I'm on call. If she needs me, I go there more than once a
week. Okay. And then when you're there that day, and looking at all the paperwork, about how long would you say that you're there?
I would say about 5 to 6 hours.
5 to 6 hours, okay.
It depends how much paperwork I need to be done.
Sure.
So
you were on call, or you were headed in to go see the residents, and there was an emergency?
I'm always on call with her. She needs me on call. Sometimes I even work on the floor. But that day, I was getting ready. I'm already ready. I'm headed to the facility. But she didn't let me know that she was leaving. She didn't let me know that she has a new hired housekeeper. And when I was at the door, someone called me. She called me that she said that the Department of Health is there. I said, okay, I'm headed over to the facility.
Who called you to say
the owner.
Over. But she didn't call you to tell you there was an emergency?
No, she didn't call me that she's leaving, that she has an emergency to go somewhere, that she's leaving the facility.
Then how did she know DHS was at the house?
The caregiver, the housekeeper called her.
Called her?
Yes.
And then she called you?
And then she called me to come over. I was headed that way anyway, so I just went.
So just listening to your testimony and having read the file, it sounds to me as though you hang a license on a property to allow a property to run, but you are not involved in the day-to-day operations of the property, the hiring, the discipline, the ensuring of the staffing, the welfare of the residents. That's all done by the owner.
Yes, she informed me if there's, you know.
Right, so how much is she paying you for that?
That depends how many hours I come to the facility.
I'm just curious, what's your paycheck look like per month? It's a fair question.
That's a $15 an hour.
$15 an hour? You think?
$15.
She testified that she's there one day a week, approximately 5 to 6 hours. So can you tell me, is it worth it that you would hang a license up there and you were hung out to dry? Because I don't see anybody sitting next to you. In other words, the owner's not here. They didn't send you here with an attorney to represent you.
It's not worth it. I'm leaving the facility, actually, because I'm trying to tell her what to do. I'm trying to tell the owner what it has to be done, because I know what has to be done in the facility. I just don't hang my certificate with her. I go to her and talk to her on a daily basis if there's something changes. But hiring decisions, she makes those. I don't make the hiring decision. But like I said, it's not worth it for me to stress, because I'm telling her what's supposed to do and what not supposed to do, and sometimes you don't get along.
So if she's not doing what you as the manager, who is certified by the state to ensure certain things are being done, to meet regulation, to ensure the highest quality of care is going out to those residents, then what should you do with your certificate?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
If you know that the owner is not in tune, going along with what you're recommending to make sure the highest quality care gets to those residents, what should you do as the manager?
I tried to implement it, I educate you, but now I'm trying to separate from her.
So how long have you been the manager there?
see. She started July. About a year last August. So
for a year, you've had your manager's license on the wall while the owner runs the business and not listening to what you have to say.
Well, that's happening lately. So that's what's happening lately, that when she told me the state is coming, I went, yeah, but I told her that this is need to be done, like there's certain things that need to be done according to rules and regulation. And sometimes we would argue and said, this is not the way it is. This is the way we should be doing it this way.
Okay. You've been a manager since 2014?
Have you given her notice that you're leaving her?
Yes.
How long does it take to leave?
I gave her time to find a manager by the end of this year.
That's a very nice thing. Is it something that's required?
I just don't want her to left without manager, because I know it's required in the Department of Health to have a manager.
But she doesn't care if you didn't trouble as her manager.
Yes.
So.
But that's what I'm coming to my conclusion. So I, like I said, I'm trying to, she's a nice person. I mean, she's taking care of the residents the way it should be. So I told her by the end of this month that should give you enough time to find a manager. So please find one for your own, manager for your own good, because we don't agree in certain things. But I want to be done, and if you're not agreeing with it, then I have to leave.
Well, you're the one that's here and in trouble because of all this.
I know that. It's put me a lot of.
If she doesn't want to follow the rules, then she doesn't need to have home. It's just simple as that. We have rules and regulations in place to protect the public, and
yes,
if they're not followed, we don't want those type of homes open.
I understand that, and like I said, she said she's been in the business for 20 years. I trusted her in the beginning, and then there was a time that we really argued on some stuff that
You're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
If you hang your certificate someplace else, and you have a conflict with that owner,
I am not going to put my license anywhere right now.
I thought you did two homes.
No, right now I'm going to be done with the end of the month with her, and moving forward, I'm just going to keep my license in my house.
So you have your own care home.
It's my parents.
Okay. So, I'll still ask the question though. If you did, because I think you try to be a nice person and you want to do favors for people. If you were to hang a certificate again with a different homeowner that's not listening to you,
I would be. Totally right now, if I would manage another home, I would be a manager on the floor. I would be working there on a daily basis. Not going to be like something happens like this. And like I said, I'm not planning to work on paying my license anytime soon.
Okay, well, I agree with the recommendations. Are there any other questions from any other board member? Okay, hearing none. Based on the information obtained in the investigative report, the board finds sufficient evidence of a violation of ARS 36446, 0783, ARS 44610, AACR 433407A and B1 for unprofessional conduct, and complaint number 20-117 involving manager Baby Jane Aputin, and that the board offer consent agreement to be signed within 10 days of the matter to be forwarded to formal hearing. Consent agreement shall include the following conditions: suspension of the certificate, the state of suspension as long as the terms of the consent agreement are met. Probation with all terms to be completed in 3 months. Reimbursement of investigative costs in the amount of $415. 3 hours of continuous education with the executive director's pre-approval required, and documentation completion in each of the following areas. Personnel requirements, and I'll add 3 hours of ethics. Any costs of the probation or those of the certificate holder?
Second.
Charles and Wally.
Member Philip Franklin?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Herman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you for being here today. Next up, we have item number 27, complaint number 20-113, involving Adriana Riviera. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Chief Phil, if you could outline the case, please, sir.
Okay, this is complaint 20-113. Licensee is Adriana Rivera, who's present here today. On July 6th, 2020, DHS conducted an assisted living facility compliance inspection at Loma Vista Assisted Living located in Mesa. The compliance inspection identified 5 deficiencies in 4 different areas. Ms. Rivera was notified of the complaint, and she did provide a written response. It was on approximately September 9th of 2020 when DHS took enforcement action and imposed a civil money penalty of $500 for 1 substantiated violation. And Ms. Rivera is here today to discuss the compliance inspection with the public.
Thank you so much. Ms. Rivera, when did you become the manager of the facility?
With a new owner, 2 years.
I'm sorry?
2 years.
2 years you've been there.
It used to be another owner, and then they sold the facility. They sold the care home.
Okay. So it used to be another owner, but they sold the care home.
Yeah.
And you've been there the whole time?
I work there part-time because I have a regular job.
What's your regular job?
I do work in a big facility.
You work where?
In a big behavioral place.
You work in the behavioral facility as?
As a med tech.
As a med tech, okay. Thank you for clarifying. Were you at the facility at the time of the survey?
No, but the caregiver called me. I was in the store.
You were at the store?
Okay.
And
I don't work full time, but I only work 2 times a week.
So you're at the facility 2 times a week?
Yeah.
How big of a facility is it? How many
residents? Only 7 people.
7 people?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's your role there?
She's helped the owner to do the paperwork. And sometimes I work in the floor when she showed a caregiver because she's been having problems hiring caregivers.
Sure. Okay. So what happened the day of the inspection that there was no one there?
It was a caregiver that he hired, but the certificate, it was not good.
Okay.
And I did the correction and we did fire the caregiver. And I did get some information to check the certificates and make sure that those certificates are not, I mean, crooked.
Right.
Did you know how to do that before?
No, I didn't.
So the surveyor is the one who
the surveys,
looked it up and showed
yeah, me. And they give me a list of all that to compare. Because there's a lot of things going on with the certificates.
And where do you get that list now?
I have it with her.
Where would you look somebody new? Where would you look up somebody new?
What do you mean?
Like if another caregiver came in and they handed you a certificate.
Well, I'm going to check the fingerprints in the background. And then I have a list of all the schools that they are good. I have it in here.
And what if that list does change tomorrow? Where are you going to find?
Oh, I have the website. I mean,
I
now I got that information.
Okay. I didn't have it before. Okay. So you know where to go with that?
Yeah.
Information.
Yeah.
Okay. So in part of your explanation of the items that you do, you kind of help out with the paperwork.
Yeah, and sometimes I help in the facility.
Right.
In the facility, like
sure. Who's responsible for the service plans?
The owner, because he's the nurse.
The owner was responsible for the service plans?
And me, I mean, I take my part. I did a mistake and I checked him. But it is the owner is the same, the nurse. He didn't follow.
Okay.
With a service plan to personal care.
He writes his own service plan? Does he have his own form?
Yeah, we have it.
Who all signs on the service plan?
The nurse.
Who else?
Myself.
And who else?
What do you mean? The owner?
Who?
The family.
Who all, under regulation, who's supposed to sign on the service plan?
Well, the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And the family.
And?
The families. And the doctor, I mean, I'm a little bit of everybody.
It's okay to be nervous.
So how was there not someone present when the surveyor came?
Oh, it was somebody there, but it was a caregiver that certificate it was not good. But I did talk to the survey today.
That's what, yeah, she didn't know how to look up whether the certificate was good or not. So she...
He didn't have a certificate, but the certificate was not good.
He presented a certificate.
It was a fraudulent certificate.
Well, I guess the school, yes. You know.
Was that reported?
I did. I mean, I didn't be there. I did fire the caregiver.
That's not
human.
Every day.
And then it happened before to me because we used to have another caregiver and everything was fine. And then it happened to me before.
So what's your takeaway on this survey? What are you doing differently?
I did some in-service for the nurse and myself and the owner.
You did in-service training?
Yeah, to correct, to make sure, and I applied for the care plans to check it, the time it expired, and I did the corrections.
So do you have how do you keep track of when things
expire? I have the list, when the time it expired.
Of the residents?
Every resident.
How about the employees of the building?
Why not? We do not have an employee, the owner and myself working.
Well, then your employees.
Eh?
Your employees then? Your employees of that business.
Oh, myself.
Right. So you keep track of that also?
Yeah, I keep track of all my papers and they don't get fired and everything. Yeah.
So it's just you and that owner.
Yeah.
You have no caregivers.
For now. We keep getting a lot of applications. But you know that they're home, they don't want to pay a lot. Caregiving, they don't want to work too much.
So my question is this. You had previously testified that you worked there part-time.
I work 2 times a week.
Right, so who's there all the time?
The owner lives there.
He lives there. Okay.
How can one do seven?
So now if somebody new is going to be hired by the owner, are you helping?
I did get him the list and I showed him how to do it.
Okay.
And
does he call you?
And then he calls me so I can check. Because we do have a lady that's going to start with us.
Okay.
And then the list I have, the certificate match, and I'm going to check the background, you know, like the fingerprint,
right.
The CPR, and everything.
Okay.
Yeah. We do have somebody in the list that she's going to start.
Well, that's amazing in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Right, caregivers, we all know that.
The issue was is that there was no one truly there providing services, regardless of certificate or not. There was no one that was certified to actually provide services to the residents that were paying for health services to be rendered in an assisted living group home setting. And there were 7 individuals there. There's an issue there. She's since rectified that. I understand that.
And there was a housekeeper there too.
However, that housekeeper is not.
I understand that.
Perfect. So
and there was somebody there. I mean, I know I did.
And her certificate was back in. You've been certified since 1992, correct?
Yeah.
When did the regulations change?
I mean, this is my first time at my myself. I didn't use my certificate.
So you've never used your certificate since 1992? This was the first time for 2 years?
No. I know that the regulation changed for the caregivers, but I didn't know how to check the certificate. I didn't.
No, no, when did the state regulations change?
I'm not sure, but yeah. It was in 2013 when they started sending the caregivers to the schools. About that time, I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. I think a little education, personnel would be in order. Any other questions from any other board member? I'm prepared to make a motion based upon the information contained in the investigative report of the board finds sufficient evidence of a violation of ARS 36-446.07B3 and ARS 4610-AACR 433-407-A and B1 for professional conduct in complaint number 20-113 involving manager Adriana Riviera, and that the board will consent agreement to be signed within 10 days of the matter before the formal hearing. Consent agreement shall include the following conditions: suspension of the certificate, the state of suspension as long as the terms of consent agreement are met, probation with all terms to be completed within 3 months, reimbursement of investigative costs in the amount of $415, 3 hours of continuous education with the executive director pre-approval required and documentation completion in each of the following areas. I will do personnel requirements and quality assurance.
Second.
I think that will cover all of the items and any cost of the probation or those of the certificate holder.
Second.
Charles and Member Archer.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you for being here today. Next up is item number C, Board Review Consideration on Action or Whether to Open a Complaint Investigation on Items 28, 29, and 30. Did any members see anything here that you wish to review further? Okay, then I will make a motion to not open a complaint investigation on items 28, 29, and 30. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Charles and Member Campbell, roll call.
Member Villafranc?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay. Perfect. And motion carries. It is now 10:19 a.m. And for those of us here, we need a little break real quick. If you don't mind, we're going to take a 10-minute recess, 4 minutes recess.
I've got my bubble.
Okay, the time is now 10:30 a.m. Board is now back in session. All right. Let's see. Next up,
do you want to do a roll call?
Do a roll call out.
Member Villafranca?
Present.
Member Campbell?
Present.
Member Archer?
Here.
Member Kidder?
Here.
Member Lewis?
Here.
Member Ehrman?
All right. Board has formed. So we are back at item number 7, consent agenda to approve assisted living facility caregiver manager training programs and renewals of assisted living caregiver manager training programs. Item number 37. I will make a motion to approve all.
Second.
Charles and Member Archer. Roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Mr. President, are we on number 6?
Yes, we just noticed. Okay, so that carries. Now we'll go back to item number 6. Number A, consent agenda to approve temporary administrator
license permit administrator license, temporary manager certification, permit manager certification, and passing all required examinations within the substantive time frame of the license or certification being denied. I make a motion to approve all.
Second.
Member Archer. Roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Herman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you for keeping us on track. Next up is individual board review, consideration and action on applicants temporary and our permanent manager. Permanent administrator license or manager certification approved and passing all required examinations within the substantive time frame or the license or certification will be denied. Beginning with item number 32, permanent manager certification, Alan Engel, or Alan Eichel.
And he's not present, so I'd like to move him to February.
Okay, we'll move him to February. Item number 33, permanent manager certification, Leanne Leslie Larson. Thank you for being here today.
This is Ms. Leanne Leslie Larson. On October 25th of 2020, she applied to become a permanent assisted living facility manager. Her application became administratively complete on November 30th of 2020. She answered truthfully to the question she'd ever been charged with a criminal offense. She indicated that in 1990, she was found guilty of shoplifting, and in 1991, she was found guilty of a DUI. She indicated that in 1990, she was in Kmart with a friend who shoplifted, and because she was with that friend, she was also charged with shoplifting. She was ordered to pay fines in that case. In 1991, she and her boyfriend had been out drinking. When they left the establishment, she drove the vehicle. They were then pulled over, and she was charged with a DUI. She had to do counseling, pay fines, serve probation, and had her driving privileges revoked. She has a current fingerprint clearance card, and she passed the December manager's exam.
Thank you. Any other issues with law? Any other issues with law enforcement since 1991?
Aside from minor traffic tickets, no other issues.
Minor traffic violations, that's it. What would you do if granted a certification today? What would you plan to do with that certification if granted a certification?
Oh, I'm going to be opening memory care facility down the nature center.
You open a memory care facility? Is it a group home or?
It will be up to 20 residents will live there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to innovate in memory care in the United States. I'm going to change the way we give it.
Okay. Questions from board members?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay, well then I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Myself and Member Archer. Roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Herman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Best of luck.
Thank you. Luck.
There is nothing for item number 34. Item 35, permanent manager certification, Bertha Shanks. Thank you for being here today. Good morning. Good morning, Ms. Malice.
On August 21st of 2020, Ms. Bertha Shanks applied to become a permanent assisted living facility manager. Her application became administratively complete on November 17th of 2020. She did not answer truthfully to the question she'd ever been charged with a criminal offense. She was charged with theft by check in 1999, 2004, and 2006. She indicated that during her on-again and off-again relationship with her husband, she would pay bills and not realize that he had also used some of the money in their joint bank account. Those checks bounced, and she would get a notification from the court regarding the charge. This would happen at times when they were separated and they were not communicating about the finances. She has paid all of her debts related to these charges. She has a current fingerprint clearance card, and she passed the January manager's exam.
Perfect. Any other issues with law enforcement since then?
No, sir, and the reason that I didn't, I answered the question that way is I did not know it was in my background until this came up. I had to contact four courts in El Paso to find out what I had. Because I understood it, where I took that question as if I had ever been arrested, had ever been before a judge, and that never came to be.
Gotcha, no worries. What will you do with your certification granted Wednesday then?
I am looking forward to starting something that's going to ensure the future of my son, who's a special needs young adult right now. I work for a gentleman who's 93, legally blind, has a hearing disability, and controls his company, and he has no family. So those are my first targets, is to ensure my son's future, that I can work at home, and always provide for him, as well as take care of everybody that comes down my path that needs, that has no family, that needs that help, that needs that attention.
So you're looking to open up a group home?
Yes.
Perfect, I wish you the best of luck. Any other questions from any other board members? I will make a motion to approve.
I second.
Why?
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder? Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Herman? Member Herman? You need to unmute.
Ted, can you hear us?
Member Lewis?
Okay. Motion carries. We still have a quorum. It's 10:38. Seems like we lost member
Herman.
Congratulations and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up is item number 36, for a permanent manager certification on Kilpatrick.
On November 3rd, 2020, Ms. Juan Kilpatrick applied to become a permanent assisted living facility manager. Her application became administratively complete on November 25th. She answered truthfully to the president she had ever been charged with a criminal offense. In 1999, she was charged with assault and criminal damage. She indicated that she and her now ex-husband got into a verbal altercation where she hit him in the arm with a cup, and then she backed her car into his truck. Ms. Kilpatrick has a current fingerprint clearance card. She passed the January manager's exam.
Perfect. Any other issues with law enforcement since 1999?
No, just the traffic tickets.
Okay. What will you do with your certification if granted one today?
I actually work at Beehive Assisted Living in Thatcher, Arizona. My manager is retiring, and he asked me to take over.
Perfect. Congratulations. Any other questions from any other board member?
No.
I will make a motion to approve.
Second.
Archer, okay, Member Archer. And roll call.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Member Herman?
Aye.
Member Herman?
I wasn't able to hear that. Or he find here?
If he wasn't able to hear, he just abstained.
Okay, so then are you abstaining since you couldn't hear that one?
Still abstaining, yes, sir.
Okay, but we still have quorum and motion carries. Thank you so much. Congratulations to you, ma'am.
It was a lot of fun to listen to you guys today. Thank you so much.
Come on back anytime.
Come on back. Yeah,
I will.
Give credit for
I
being here.
I need to see you.
There you go. The time is 10:41 a.m. and Member Herman is back on the line with us. Okay, next up is item 37. There's nothing there. I want to skip ahead to item number 8. It's that time of the year. We hold elections for board officers, president, and vice president. My time is, as they say, up. So, that being said, I would like to nominate Member Campbell for president, if she is most gracious to accept the nomination.
I would
I'll second that, Member Kidder.
Thank you.
Perfect. Are there any other nominations at this time for president? Are there any other nominations at this time for president? Hearing none. Member Kidder.
I wouldn't nominate. I nominate Pat Paulson, but I think Wally's definitely stronger.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that.
Okay, so hearing no other nominations, and Member Campbell has accepted the nomination. If we can go a vote.
Member Villafranca?
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
President Campbell.
Congratulations. Wally, I think that you'll do a really great job. I appreciate your willingness to step up and be able to step in during this really hard time with the pandemic. It's just been a challenge for all of us, and I commend you and your commitment and your ability to lead this board.
Thank you very much, Ken. I'm a supporter. Yes, if I may nominate, I'd like to nominate Charles Villafranca for the office of vice chair.
Second.
President.
Second.
Second by Member Archer, and I will accept the nomination. Are there any other nominations for vice president? Hearing none. Are there any other nominations for vice president? Alan, if we can do a vote.
Member Villafranca.
Aye.
Member Campbell?
Aye.
Member Archer?
Aye.
Member Kidder?
Aye.
Member Ehrman?
Aye.
Member Lewis?
Aye.
Okay, thank you so much. That takes care of that. Next up is administrative matters, financial report.
As of the end of December, 1st of January, the board had a fund balance of $398,383, which is right on track for what we projected. It may be $6,000 or $7,000 ahead of that, but of projections, but we're good on the revenue side.
Okay.
As far as the expense side, we're right where we need to be on expenses on our budget. We're about $5,500 under what we had projected at this particular point. A total budget of $470,400.
And you're still on for how long? Since we're talking about finances.
Through February.
Through February. Okay. And we're good to go?
As far as we have not heard.
We've got devil. There'll be some devil time there.
There will be coming up. Yeah. We still have not heard back from the governor's office, and I've been emailing our HR person two or three times a week to find out what's going on. I know we went through a Christmas holiday period, but still we haven't. In fact, I emailed them again today.
Okay.
If I don't hear anything back, I'll get a hold of the governor's office to find out exactly what's going on. So, but as far as I know, it should be going through.
Okay.
Not a problem. It just hasn't yet. I know we have some time constraint because there has to be notice given. There has to be, so that'll take, 3 weeks or so.
Okay.
There has to be a letter of acceptance.
Okay.
As soon as I get the green light, that'll go out. So.
Hopefully once the legislature starts today,
right.
They'll get caught up with what they're doing.
Yeah, but it's an internal thing for them. It's not.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the legislature.
No, but if it has to go through the governor's other staff or anything,
I'm sure
it'd be so sidetracked.
I'm sure it does. There's probably a, a whole line of people that's going to go through.
I just wanted to make sure, as far as financially, because, you know, there's going to be, on the finance report, there'll be two being paid out, and financially, we're set for that.
We're okay.
Okay.
We have enough money.
Perfect. Next on the agenda is item number 40, complaint status report.
Very light calendar today, obviously. Probably have 10 for next month, so we'll get back in the group. We're doing fine. We'll do all right.
Okay. I know we all got a 40A on there. It's not listed here, so I'll skip over that. Licensing report.
For our managers, we have 2,346. 17 of those are inactive, and 17 of those are holding temporary certificates. For the administrators, we have 317. 19 of those are inactive, and one is holding a temporary.
Okay. At least the number seems to be going up a little bit on the administrators, right? That's a good trend, I guess.
I said the legislature starts today. We don't have any bills at this particular, well, actually we do have a bill. On the 17th of December, I had a Senate Committee of Reference hearing, and the Committee of Reference recommended 8 years of continuation of the board, which is the maximum that they're giving out anymore. So that was their recommendation. Now we go through the Senate and House as far as the continuation bill. That'll be sponsored probably by the Senate Health Committee Chair.
I have. Do we have a number yet for it?
We don't yet, no.
And is that Senator Ruffin McGee or Senator?
No. I'm not sure who the chair's. I haven't looked to see who the chair is going to be because it's a brand new legislative session now. Brophy McGee was the committee reference chair only because it was a carryover from the prior year.
Okay.
Is that just a formality?
It
in terms of the recommendation to continue for 8 years?
It's yeah, everything has to go through the committee reference, and then that recommendation goes to the House and the Senate. There'll be hearings on those, so we'll be talking there as well.
Or someone. When those take place?
Those will take place a little later in the session.
You'll let us know.
Yeah.
The date.
Someone will.
We can bring a sign. Leave us alone.
Someone will let us know.
Someone will let us know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all I have for legislation, Christian.
Any rules update?
Rules update. We do have the rule package going through. On it has to do with one has to do with auditing continuing education, and which is part of the rule package along with on the job training rule package. Those will be heard February 2nd. At York, and then they'll go into effect 60 days after.
Pending no objections or changes. Okay. Perfect. Any training program report?
Training programs, we added one, so we have 51. As far as we're still right up there on numbers on 80% pass rate. They're a little less than that on the current executive order on OJT, but they seem to be improving some too. Other managers, I think we have 14 or 15 manager training programs, and they're right at 80% first time pass rate as well. The change in the final examination hasn't seemed to made any difference. No change in the password. We thought maybe it might, but it's
not. I thought it would too, but
they're right in tune with one another. It'd be interesting to see in a year statistically where we are.
Yeah.
are we going to stay at that same level, or is it more going to go higher than the other? Be interesting to see.
Other than that, we have a couple new applications for new training programs, but they'll be on the agenda later, at a later date.
All right. That leads us to the board meeting critique.
Well, I'd like the board to know that Senator Nancy.
Nancy Bardo.
Bardo is the new Health and Human Services Chair.
Nancy Bardo. Yeah.
Yeah, she's been very supportive over the years.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
Look forward to working with her.
And we look forward to working
with you. Yeah, she's great.
And we look forward to working with you in your new role as president. Thank you so much.
Thank you for all you've done, Charles. You've been a wonderful president.
I appreciate that. That is so kind of you.
Yes, thank you, Charles. Appreciate your commitment.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you as well and every other board member. The time is 10:52, and I think we just set a record. We'll move on to future items and meeting dates. The next regular board meeting will be held Monday, February the 8th, 2020 at 1740 West Adams, Board Meeting Room C, Phoenix, Arizona at 9 a.m. That leads us to adjourn. The time is 10:53 a.m. The board stands adjourned.
It has to be a record.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.